Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the first Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast of the new year. I'm Joe DiRienzo. I'll be hosting you for this season, providing you with all of the fantasy baseball information your heart desires. And today, I'm joined by a special guest. Seth Klein of Razzball.com is joining us for this first podcast of the new year. Seth, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me.
All right, well, a lot has happened in this offseason, and it is only January 17th, so a lot of you are wondering, how are you going to talk about baseball this early? But despite the fact that pitchers and catchers haven't reported, we've got plenty to talk about, a lot of offseason moves. So we're going to get the ball rolling right away here with some of those offseason moves that were fantasy-impacting, starting with the San Diego Padres. They added Justin Upton, Will Myers, Matt Kemp, Will Middlebrook, and Derek Norris. It was a huge haul for them this offseason, trying to change things around for that franchise. Seth, let's talk about those outfielders first. Upton, Myers, and Kemp, varying ages here, but all of them have had a ton of star potential, haven't consistently lived up to that, though. How does the change of scenery to the really big ballpark in Petco as a home ballpark change their value? And now that they're all together, how do you value them this year?
Well, I like Middlebrooks, first of all. I mean, he's probably the lowest name on that list, but I like him for a change of scenery. I mean, he's been highly disappointing the last two seasons in Boston, and even though it's a big park, let's just focus on the fact that he couldn't hit in Fenway either. And I think a starting gig, a guaranteed starting gig, he doesn't have to worry about Steven Drew coming back like it was a couple of years ago, or anyone else battling in that position. He has it right now. He's still young, and he has a lot of pop. He's not going to hit for average. But I like him as a steal late in drafts. Now, as far as the outfielders, Upton's hit very well at Petco before. In his career, he's batting .291 with 10 home runs, 19 RBIs, and almost 200 plate appearances. And he actually has the sixth highest OPS of any park in his career, which is about at 900. So, yes, over a full season, that could take a little dip. But I like him. He's right in the prime of his career. And I think he's going to have a good season.
Yeah, I agree. Upton last year set his career high for 100 with over 100 RBIs for the first time, and that was with the second-to-last team in the league with runs scored. So the potential for him to improve on those counting numbers, despite the fact that it is a bigger ballpark, to me at least, that's a good sign. Now that he actually has these fast guys around him in the San Diego Padres lineup. What about the other guys? Will Myers, especially for me, is really interesting because of the fact that he was Rookie of the Year 2 years ago, and then last year completely his season was pretty much ruined by injury, and he hit only .222. How do you think he's really ranked low this year? Do you think he has a chance of bouncing back?
I think he has to. He was always a high-ranking prospect. The Royals traded him for James Shields and Wade Davis, and they also gave Jake Odorizzi in that trade. And, you know, it could be easily a sophomore slump. It's sort of a cliche, but, look, he had a great rookie season, did tail off a little bit towards the end of his rookie season, had a poor year last year, but he had an injury for almost 2 months last season, and I think he bounces back. I think, again, like Middlebrooks, fresh start for him will be very successful.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Will Myers this year. In his 170 games he played in AAA, he's a .295 hitter, 40 homers, 30 doubles. It's more than a season's worth of stats, but the guy has shown that at high levels he can play. To me, last year was more of an aberration than the norm, so I'm looking forward to grabbing him at the end of drafts on a lot of my teams. Let's move on to Boston here. They made a couple moves as well. They added Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval as the big guys, hitting-wise and in the field. And then they added Rick Porcello, Wade Miley, and Justin Masterson all to their rotation after losing John Lester. So it's a completely new-look team as far as the pitching staff goes. But let's talk about those, the hitters, Hanley and Sandoval. They get to hit doubles off of the Green Monster this year. Do you think that boosts the two of their values?
I do. Anything is better than Dodger Stadium. And, right-handed hitters are okay at AT&T, although Sandoval is a switch hitter, but a better stadium to hit in, put it that way. And I think they'll both enjoy playing in the American League.
Completely agree with that. Hanley is a very, very much power pull hitter. He gets about 35 doubles a year. I think with the Green Monster to bounce those off of, he can get to 40 and pump up his slugging percentage for league to count slugging percentage instead of homers as their stat. I'm pumped to see this new Red Sox lineup with Hanley, Pedroia, Sandoval, Napoli, Ortiz, even if Shane Victorino gets back healthy. They've got a chance to be a pretty prolific offense there if all of the injury question marks don't become a problem. Let's talk about pitching here, because the Chicago Cubs made a big move adding John Lester from the aforementioned Red Sox. They got Jason Hamill back after they traded him for half a season, and they added Miguel Montero. But this team's trying to rebuild itself in a hurry. How does the move to Wrigley, which is considerably different than Oakland, where Lester finished pitching and Hamill as well, how does the move to Wrigley change what you expect from Lester and Hamill this year?
I don't expect too much of a change for John Lester. He's a great pitcher, and he's going to pitch well wherever he is. There's a little bit better going to the NL from the AL. You get to face that pitcher in the ninth spot. But maybe a little bit less of a pitcher's park in Chicago than Oakland. Boston's kind of in the middle there. But I think he retains around the same value, and I expect him to do well. Now, Hamill, not a huge Jason Hamill fan. He did have a great first half of the season in Chicago last year, but the rest of his career has kind of been spotty. He's had some pretty poor seasons in the past. He's not a guy I'm going to rely on too much. I think as an NL-only league guy, I'll take him, but I'll let someone else have him in mixed draft leagues.
See, that's where I think we differ a little bit, because I'm weirdly optimistic about Jason Hamill. I know he's got a career ERA above 4.5, but those 17 games with the Cubs, he was lights out. He had a sub-3 ERA. His slider was untouchable. Fangraphs actually ranked it as a top-5 pitch in baseball while he was on the Cubs, and it changed completely when he went to Oakland. Lost velocity, he lost some break on it. So if they can figure out a way to get that pitching staff to make him throw that slider the way he was throwing it in Chicago, I think he has a chance to at least get his ERA under 4 and be a serviceable guy that you can get at the very end of a draft or even pick up afterwards because of how bad that Oakland stint was. Am I being a little too optimistic about this Hamill situation, though?
Maybe a little bit. Again, if he has a performance like he did in Chicago, he's a great guy to pick off waivers or at the end of the draft. But there's certain guys that when I draft, I just say, you know what, I'll go with someone else. I'll let them have him. And in the end, I doubt he's going to be a 20-game winner or get 200 strikeouts. So in the end, whether I have him or not, it's probably not going to hurt my team either way.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. He is a legitimate wild card. If he's going to do well, it's going to be a surprise to a lot of people. I admit that I am a little bit overly optimistic about him because I had him for that Cubs stint last year, and I saw how great he could be as an asset to your fantasy team if he's performing well, but it's not a guarantee. Let's move on here. The Oakland A's, they traded a lot of guys away, but they added Ben Zobrist and Billy Butler. And every year, I think we agree on this, Ben Zobrist seems to be in the conversation at all times for a good player, a decent player. He hits about 15-15, 275 average, and he's got a change of scenery now, so people might think, oh, fresh start, some of those 15-15 up to 20-20, 275 average up a little bit. Do you think that people are going to overdraft him because of this change of scenery?
I do. I think he's a guy that's overdrafted every year, and yes, he had some good seasons, but he's going to be turning 34 right as the season starts the season. His ground ball rate was up last year, fly ball rate down. The sign of a hitter slowing down his swing, which can happen as you get older. And the position eligibility is nice. If you can get him cheap in an auction draft, sure. But I wouldn't be too high on Ben Zobrist this year. The lineup in Oakland right now is probably worse than the Rays lineup was last year, and that's not saying a lot. So maybe if you can get him as a steal, but otherwise it's probably a guy I'd leave for somebody else.
He's one of those guys. He just seems to get drafted earlier because they're like, oh, Ben Zobrist. Everybody kind of knows him. They know what they're getting when you draft Ben Zobrist. It's decent stats across the board. but he gets drafted for a little bit more than what he can give. And you're right, the change of scenery is to a slightly worse lineup. So I'm probably not going to end up with Zobrist on any of my teams this year, unless we're wrong about him climbing draft boards a little bit. But the whole new chance, fresh start scenario here, I'm not buying, especially because, like you said, he's turning 34, which surprises a lot of people because he seems like one of those guys that's just sort of, he's young, he's been in the league for only a little while, has a bigger name. So, but yeah, overall, the Oakland A's got a good player in Ben Zobrist, but not a good fantasy player. Now, with all of these moves, there have been a lot of holds that have been on other rosters. So these guys are all moving around, but there is a generation of younger players that a lot of the Dynasty League fantasy guys and the redraft leagues should be paying attention to as well. So let's talk about the young guys who are potentially getting a chance to prove themselves and maybe garner some fantasy attention this year. We'll start with Andrew Haney, who got traded twice in this offseason. He got traded to the Dodgers in the D. Gordon deal, and now he got traded from the Dodgers to L.A. in the Howie Kendrick deal. So he's moved around a lot. But with Garrett Richards out for the start of the season and the Angels not having a sure thing at 4 or 5 in their starting position in pitching anyway, Haney's got a chance to at least open the season as their 4 or 5 starter. Do you think he's got a chance to have some fantasy value this year?
I think so. In deeper leagues, right now, that's all I'm saying. He could go on a run, and that team is pretty good. I don't know if they'll fully unleash him. I think they're still probably going to get a innings cap on him. He pitched around 160 total innings last year, so maybe he'll go up to 180, 190. But he does have a chance to come out in spring training, pitch well, and start the season. Like you said, Richards out. Not a big fan of Santiago. And Tyler Skaggs is out for the season with Tommy John. So he has a shot. And, yeah, it was really weird. He got traded twice on the same day in both the L.A. teams, and it was interesting being on from L.A. It was kind of interesting to see everyone get excited as a Dodger fan. And, oh, now he's on the Angels.
Yeah, it was a very quick trade from the Dodgers to the Angels. He didn't last long. It was interesting because it essentially turned D. Gordon into Howie Kendrick and a couple prospects. So it was an odd situation in L.A. for the Dodgers, but I think Haney has a pretty good shot here at least proving for the first couple of months that he's got a chance, because Garrett Richards probably is out until May-ish, and that's if all the rehab goes well, if his starts that he's coming off of are going well for the minor league rehab stint. So I think Haney's got a chance. He had a 2.77 ERA with only 60 walks and 260 innings in minor league work, which is really, really impressive this early on in his season. Or in his career, rather. And that changeup that he has is pretty nasty. According to Fangraphs, that is the second-best changeup in baseball in his little time that he had up in the majors. So if he's got that good of an out pitch, and he's getting that to work for his strikeouts, he's going to prove to this team that guys like Hector Santiago and Nick Trapiano don't deserve that spot ahead of him in that starting rotation. And he is 23. He's not like one of these young 21-year-old guys that they're not sure if they want to give him a chance. So I think Haney's got a decent shot at getting in this lineup. The question is whether he'll stay once Garrett Richards gets back in there.
Yeah, I think a lot of that will have to do with his performance and how many innings he's accrued at that point.
Next up for us, Cleveland Indians. Their shortstop, Francisco Lindor, has been the number one prospect in their organization for a couple of years, and he just turned 21 this offseason. As Drubal Cabrera is out, he is now Washington. Is he on the Nationals now as Drubal Cabrera?
He's on Tampa.
He moved again. Tampa.
Yeah, well, he was on Washington last year and not Tampa, yeah.
Yeah, so Jose Ramirez, as of right now, is the starting shortstop for the Indians, but Lindor is knocking on the door. He's nearly there to get up into the majors, and he's got a 22-year-old in Jose Ramirez to compete with for the shortstop job, which is interesting. The Indians say that Lindor is going to start the year off in AAA, but how closely should fantasy players be monitoring this situation? Is he a guy you should even draft and stash because you think he'll be up that soon?
He's not going to be a player I'm going to draft too soon. For fantasy, he's a great prospect, probably the number one major league-ready prospect shortstop in baseball right now. But from a fantasy perspective, he's not as good as real life, not going to hit home runs, not going to drive in a lot of runs. He'll steal a few bases. And in the minors, he's around 25, 20 stolen bases a season. So he's not going to impact you that much. Now, as an upside pick later in the draft, I think that lineup's a little bit improved. I think he's worth a grab, but he's definitely not going to be in my top 10 or 15 shortstops to start the season.
Yeah, I think he's got a little bit of waiting to do. It seems like the Indians are going to be very patient with him, given the fact that he is pretty young, despite the fact that they've got a guy they know has been their top prospect for a while. He's a great fielder, but like you said, that makes him a better real-life guy than a fantasy guy. He's got the wheels to steal some bases for you. He's got a little bit of pop, not a ton, and he's got room to grow. So this year, maybe not the guy you want as a top 15 shortstop, but if he comes up in June or July or August, you might want to pay attention. Because he is so young and so raw, he's got a chance to develop those skills a lot more. It's a very odd situation, like I said, with this Jose Ramirez, because they're drastically different. They had a ton of moves in the regular season last year trying to figure out how their infield was going to look. And if he comes up, it just causes more of a jumble. And I think Terry Francona talked in the offseason about how he wanted some but they talked about how he wanted to be a more consistent infield and make them get a groove together defensively, because last year they changed it around so much. So I think Lindor, they're going to be patient with. I think you have to keep an eye on him, especially if you're in dynasty leagues, probably owned already. But when the word's out that he's got a chance to come up to the majors, they're not going to just sit him. So he'll get his chance to be in that lineup. Now moving on to Chicago White Sox. We talked about the Cubs earlier, but the White Sox are a slightly different story. The young guy I want to talk about is Carlos Rodon. He, in free agency, was talked about as potentially someone that would get the Chris Sale treatment, bring him in as an end-of-the-bullpen kind of guy, end-of-the-games, potentially a closer, and then transition him to a starter like Sale did. However, they added Ripken to be their closer in the offseason. Probably going to start the year off in the minors. Because of these changes, do you think Rodon kind of gets shut out for fantasy value this year?
No, I don't think so. I think he gets a shot. Now, I actually prefer him to come in as a starter and not come in as a closer, because Chris Sale, yeah, it's worked out, though. We're always afraid of Chris Sale and that herky-jerky windup he has, but there's been quite a history of players, pitchers, that they started off as closer, reliever, and then decide to transition to starter, to name a few, Jabba Chamberlain, Naftali Feliz. There's quite a few guys that have done that, hurt themselves, and really, you know, either never been the same or take a long time to get back to where they were. So I don't mind waiting if it means him becoming a starter. They have a huge deficiency at the end of their rotation. Now, Sale Samardzija and even Jose Quintana is a very underrated guy, but John Danks and Hector Nwosi, not very good. They were both pretty poor last year, and I think that if Rodon performs well in the minors and they're fighting for a spot in the playoffs and those two guys at the end of the rotation are just sucking it up, I think they give him a shot, and I think he's a guy to keep an eye on as the season goes on.
It's a good point about the back of their rotation, and I agree with you. I'd much rather them actually groom a guy for the position they want him to play and not sort of transition him, because Sale seems like he's more of the exception than the rule as far as closer to starter goes in the transition for a young guy. Rodon's only played 9 games in the minors last year. He got a lot of talk because he had a sub-3 ERA, 38 strikeouts in 24 innings, and he was nasty. But he's got very little experience, so I think it makes sense for them to at least start him in the minors, give him some more run to get used to the major league talent, or the close to major league talent, the higher levels. But like you said, Hector Nwosi, John Danks, the back of that starting rotation, if they're going to compete this year, it's probably going to include Carlos Rodon in the back of that rotation, because he's going to be a beast. He's got the filthy stuff. He's got the full starter body. He really looks like he's got the stamina to be a good starter. So it's a matter of when they're comfortable with getting him up to the majors and using him in that starting rotation instead of the Danks and the Nwosis that they have at the back of that rotation. Another guy that seems like he's sort of being closed out, at least in my opinion, to the major league level, is Henry Owens. The Red Sox added a bunch of middle-level guys. They added Justin Masterson, Wade Miley, and Rick Porcello to their pitching staff this offseason. And Henry Owens was, at least before that, thought of as a guy that might join the rotation, but now it seems like they're full. in their starting rotation, and he might come out of the bullpen or something like that to start the year, or AAA. What is the likelihood that Owens becomes fantasy relevant this year?
I think it's similar to Rodon's situation. He's going to need a guy ahead of him in that major league rotation to screw up. And to me, that guy could easily be Justin Masterson, who was just terrible last year. And he got that change of scenery when he got traded to St. Louis. And he just was even worse in St. Louis than he was in Cleveland, actually got demoted to the bullpen. He's on a one-year deal, all by a $9.5 million deal, but a one-year deal. So if the Red Sox feel like he's kind of not the same pitcher that he was when he was on the Red Sox before or on Cleveland in the beginning, I think they would call a guy up like Owens, although there are other guys there, Renato among them. They have other pitchers in the minors. I don't know if Owens is that first guy, but, again, a guy to keep an eye on. He's a very good pitcher, and he's going to be a big part of that franchise.
Yeah, it was an interesting offseason for the Red Sox after they missed out on when they thought they were getting John Lester. They kind of just added a bunch of depth at starting pitching. Porcello's coming off his best year as a starter. Wade Miley and Masterson slightly less so. Like you said, one of these guys could fizzle out, and it could even be Clay Buchholz because the guy has been so injured these past couple years. Questions in that rotation, despite the fact there's a lot of experienced guys. And Owens has been talked about by his pitching coach for the Pawtucket Sox, Rich Sevier. He says he has the potential to be the Sox 1 or 2 starter when they're ready to bring him up. But he doesn't have a ton of that minor league experience. He's done a great job, 2.75 ERA, striking batters out at a high rate. But the pitching coach at least seems like he needs a little bit more time at the higher levels, the AAA, before he gets comfortable going up to Boston and really contributing. So I think it depends on whether the Sox are content with being patient with him and whether they're really, really competitive this year and comfortable with one of those guys at the back of their rotation, or they want to bring up their electric young guy. It's a very similar situation for both of these Sox teams, the White Sox and the Red Sox. It depends on how competitive they are. It depends on how willing they are to let a guy wait while they have more mediocre talent at the major league level. Which one of these guys do you think has a better chance of coming up and playing sooner for their team?
I think it might be Rodon, but it could be close.
It's going to be close. Rodon almost came up at the end of last year, and they sort of shut him down at the very end. But that was because he pitched college all of last year as well, so they didn't want to add too many innings to him. I think you're right. I think Rodon is the best chance. They have more guys that have been there, and they know what they're getting from them. So if they start to suffer a little bit and they, White Sox, really want to contend, I think Rodon is the better bet if you're trying to decide on which of these young guys to keep a closer eye on your team, or even draft if you have a deep draft. We've got one more prospect for you folks here. Jock Peterson, he is our final prospect to evaluate here, and he benefits from the Dodgers sending Matt Kemp to San Diego to have a slightly less crowded outfield, and there's now a gap in the top of the batting order now that Dee Gordon is in Miami. So Peterson's path to the big leagues got a slight amount easier. As of right now, they're saying he's going to compete for the starting center field spot with Andre Ethier, which to me sounds a bit odd given the players that Peterson and Ethier are. But he also could fill in when they need him for Carl Crawford when he inevitably has his 20-game DL stint. Do you think he can beat out Ethier for that center field job, or is there a chance that he gets the playing time regardless with the skill set that he has to bring to the table?
I think he should. He should definitely be starting over Ethier. It all becomes a question of whether Andre Ethier gets traded or not. And they've been trying to package him all season to Arizona was a name that one team that was mentioned. But Andre Ethier, look, he's overpriced, and he was overvalued when the Dodgers gave him that extension a few years ago. He's regressed, and one major thing is he can't hit lefties at all. He was great in 2012, hit 20 home runs, but that was because he batted 325 versus right-handers, and that right-handed batting against right-handers has dropped all the way down to 253 last year. So when he's hitting 210, 220 versus lefties, and that's not offset by a 290, 300 average versus righties, that's going to equal a poor hitter. The problem is he's owed over $50 million through 2017, and any team that's going to trade for him, the Dodgers are probably going to have to pick up a huge portion of that. But if it means getting Peterson in that lineup, I think in the end, for a team like the Dodgers, who's clearly willing to spend as much money as it takes, I think it's worth it, because Peterson and Yasiel Puig, I mean, those are the two cornerstones of that franchise in the outfield, and they're going to be two stars for a long time, and time to get out with the old and in with the new, and I think getting rid of Ethier and putting Peterson at the top of that lineup is the first start to that.
That's a great point. Ethier really is kind of the odd man out here. Like you said, he's regressing. He's getting older. He doesn't have the range Jock Peterson's going to have in that outfield. Doesn't have the wheels Jock Peterson has on the field. Doesn't hit for as good of an average as Peterson has shown in his career. He hit 300 in his minor league career so far. The guy has been a guy the Dodgers fans are waiting for to come up for a while now. And now that he hit 30 home runs last year in the minors, 55 in the last two seasons, Peterson is the real deal. He's a guy that I'm excited about on the fantasy side of things. And I think I would be shocked if the Dodgers didn't get rid of Ethier for whatever they can get for, maybe eat some of that salary. Like you said, it's a lot of money that's owed to him. But Ethier has said he doesn't want to play backup to anybody. He's not going to sit on the bench. He's going to request a trade. And I really don't see a scenario where the two of these guys fight it out, and barring Peterson getting, I don't know, if he gets injured, if he gets a little stage shy with the major league level, which I don't predict. There's not many scenarios I can see Ethier ending up with this job over him on opening day. And other
tell me if you agree.
Tell me if you agree with Peterson being the guy that we've talked about the most that might be the most exciting from the fantasy perspective this year.
As a rookie?
Yeah.
Yeah, the three guys, yeah, definitely. Or the four guys, definitely. He has that potential. We saw it. I think he was the first, was it the first 30-30 guy in the PCL or something last year? In like 30 or 40 years,
yeah.
Yeah, so he's got that potential. Exciting guy, speed, power, and put him in a decent lineup like that, and I think he's going to be a fun guy to watch. And the one thing actually I was going to say was, when we talked about Ben Zobrist earlier, and you're like, wow, we didn't realize that, you know, he's going to be 34, and Andre Ethier is also going to turn 34 this year, and it's another guy that you kind of think, wow, what, he just come in the league, you know, a few years ago,
yeah.
So, you know, he's almost halfway to 40, so that's just a terrible contract, and I think the Dodgers would do anything to get rid of that.
That makes me feel old, because Ethier and Zobrist were some of the young guys when I first started playing fantasy, and now they're getting to be the age where you're like, oh, I don't know, he's on the decline, he's 34 years old. So it's a weird situation from the age perspective, for me at least. We got 2 minutes left here. Let's wrap things up. Seth, talk about some of the stuff you want to do with Razzball this year, some of the stuff our listeners can look forward to seeing on your site.
Well, I'm a writer at Razzball. It's a great group of writers over there, fantastic site. It's, if you're looking for fantasy baseball advice, it's some of the best, funny stuff, writing, and you're always going to be entertained, and they have prospects and waiver wire ads, and I'll be on there all season. Last season I did the injury reports. I'm hoping to get a little bit more expanded this year. I was sort of a new member last year, and now I'm writing exclusive for them. I was at like 3 or 4 other sites back then, but I'm there now, and you can also find all my rankings at fantasypros.com all season long. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm on there 24/7. Literally, I'm answering questions at 4 a.m. and whatnot, start, sit, draft, trade questions all the time. Follow me on there at Seth the Sportsman, SethDaSportsman. And I'll be happy to answer anything you want to know about fantasy baseball this coming season.
Yeah, well, for any of the listeners that listen to this podcast, they know this guy knows his stuff. Seth, thank you so much for joining us on our inaugural podcast for baseball in the 2015 season. We hope you all enjoyed it. We've got a lot to talk about for this off season coming up. We're going to be talking every Saturday at 1 o'clock leading up to the regular season. We'll be giving draft advice, rankings, fantasy team advice, also gives out a draft kit, so look forward to that being produced. But, Colm, I'm Joe DiRienzo from Fantasy Team Advice. Thank you very much for listening to our baseball podcast.